4. Chapter 4 is entitled Transcendental Knowledge. So mainly this fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita is focusing on Karma Yoga philosophically, but in this chapter the added difference is that real stress is placed on the fact that one's Karma Yoga must be performed for the pleasure of Krishna. This is stressed particularly in the first section of this chapter. Krishna establishes his own position very clearly, something that he hasn't done so far at all, at least not very much at all. So now, in the fourth chapter, the transcendental knowledge actually which this chapter is named for is mainly this knowledge about Krishna. Earlier on in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna made the point that many, many births both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you can't. So in this way, Krishna made a distinction between himself and Arjuna and the rest of us, that he's in a different category. He also, towards the end of the second chapter, when he was describing Buddhi Yoga, Nishkam Karma Yoga, there was one verse in which he said, Matpara, Matparaha, that you must perform this Karma Yoga with attachment to me. And in the third chapter, he also, the same point was there, just briefly referred to, like Yagyartat Karma Non Yatra, that you must perform Yajna or Karma Yoga for Vishnu, who is, of course, a form of Krishna. But now here in the fourth chapter, Krishna is very explicitly going to establish himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything has come, and that he is the real goal of all of our activities, including these activities of Karma Yoga. This theme of Karma Yoga is the main theme in these first six chapters, as we discussed on the first day. Yoga, different types of yoga, but particularly Karma Yoga. So again, in the fourth chapter, Karma Yoga is also being discussed, but now very, very specifically in relationship with Krishna himself. So our first section, section A, transcendental knowledge about Krishna. So there are four subsections. In the first, Krishna discusses the principle of parampara. In the first verse, Krishna explains how previously he established a parampara. Imam vivasvate yogam proktavam aham avyayam vivasvan manave praha manurikshvakave hrnit. Previously he established another parampara beginning with vivasvan, but in the second verse he explains that even though that parampara worked for some time, the knowledge was handed down from saintly king to saintly king through the generations, but unfortunately, that succession was broken. That in itself is an interesting story. Briefly, what happened was that one great sage, Gotama, probably you've heard of Gotama Rishi, there was a major disturbance in the universe, and all the Brahmins in the universe, they came to the ashram of Gotama to take shelter. I'm not sure what exactly happened, but they were all very disturbed, so they came and took shelter of Gotama, and they stayed in his ashram. Then, when the disturbance was over, and Gotama wanted them to all No, Gotama wanted them all to stay. He wouldn't let them go home. And they wanted to go home. So they made up a trick so as they could get release from Gotama's ashram and be able to go back home. So that trick was, they made up one calf out of straw, and they put this straw calf on the pathway leading down to the river from the ashram. During the course of one night, they left it there. So Gotama, when he went down to take his bath the next morning, he was walking down the path and he knocked over the straw calf. So all these Brahmins came down afterwards and they said, "Oh, you just killed a cow. So we can't stay here any longer. We're going." So they all left. They had to make up this trick, otherwise they wouldn't have been able to get away. So they all went. So Gotama, he was really disturbed that I killed a cow. How is this possible? So he went looking around. Where's this cow that I've killed? And then he found the straw calf, and he realized that it was just a trick. So he cursed all the Brahmins. This is all the Brahmins in the universe. That you'll lose all your knowledge. May your knowledge become ignorance. So this is actually how the parampara was broken. And this is why Vyas came, and this is also an important reason why Krishna himself came. Particularly Vyas came to reestablish the Vedas from this position of basically being lost. And Bhagavad Gita was also lost along with the Vedas. So Krishna himself here is reestablishing Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, that parampara, starting with Vivaslan, was broken. Srila Prabhupada gives a calculation in the purport of the first verse. It's rather a complicated calculation, but the idea is that he gave this, the demigods, all the demigods in the universe change every manu. There are 14 manus in one day of Brahma. So other than Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, all the demigods are replaced each manu. In other words, 14 times in a day of Brahma. So Prabhupada is basing his calculation, it's on page 217 in this, my Bhagavad Gita. He's basing his calculation on the assumption that Krishna spoke this knowledge to Vivasvan right at the beginning of the lifetime of this manu. So he does a calculation that a manu lives for about 305,300,000 years. And we, of that period of 305 million years, about 120,400,000 have passed already. How he arrives at that is that in a lifetime of a manu, there are approximately 72 cycles of the four yugas. One day of Brahma is 1,000 cycles. There are 14 manus in one day of Brahma. So if you divide 1,000 by 14, you get, it's not an exact figure, but you get, it's about 72. So there are 72 cycles of the four yugas in the lifetime of one manu. Krishna appears in the 28th cycle of the seventh of the manus. Anyway, in the lifetime of this manu, he appears in the 28th cycle. So if you multiply, one cycle of four yugas is what? 4,320,000 years. You multiply 4,320,000 by 28, and you get about 120,400,000. I don't know if you're able to follow that, but that is the idea. 28, we're now in the 28th cycle. So 28 times 4,320,000 is about 120,400,000. So assuming that Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Vivasvan at the beginning of the lifetime of this Manu, it would mean it was 120,400,000 years ago. But then the knowledge became lost. And now, in verse 3, Krishna explains that I'm going to explain it to you, Arjuna. Why? Vaktosi me sikha cheti. Because you're my devotee and my friend. Of course, there were many Brahmins and great saintly rishis and different types of saintly persons like that present on the planet. Even Vyasadeva himself was present. But Krishna chose Arjuna, and Arjuna's a Kshatriya, he's not even a Brahmin. But why? Bhaktosi me sikha cheti. Because you're my devotee and my friend. Therefore you are able to understand this. Because of this quality of consciousness, that pure devotional quality of Arjuna's consciousness, he'll be able to grasp all these things. So parampara, you know, to establish the parampara as such is a very important thing. Very important. We shouldn't underestimate. In a sense, it's even more important than killing the demons and doing that sort of thing. In fact, when Krishna says dharma samsthapanataya, to re-establish the principles of religion, practically the most important thing that Krishna does in order to re-establish the principles of religion is to re-establish the parampara. Very important. So, in the second subsection, verses 4 to 6, Arjuna asks a fairly obvious question, at least for someone who doesn't really understand Krishna's position, that you're saying that you spoke this knowledge to Vivasvan, and we take that to be 120 million years ago, but how is that possible? Because Vivasvan, because you've only been on the planet at that time, the Battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna had been on the planet something like 89 years. Battle of Kurukshetra took place 36 years before Krishna left. And Krishna stayed on the planet 125 years. So if you take 36 away from 125, you get 89. So you're only 89. And this sun god, you know, talking about 100 million years ago, that you're meant to have spoken this knowledge to him. So how's that possible? So then Krishna goes on to explain that he's now starting to establish his position as the Supreme Lord. You and I have appeared many times, Arjuna. It's verse 5. We've appeared many times together. I can remember all of them. You can't remember any of them. You can't even remember any of them, but I can remember all of them. So I'm different from you. I'm different from you. And what is the difference? The difference is that Arjuna, or should we say at least, the conditioned soul changes body. Prabhupada explains in these purports that we lose our memory of what happened even earlier in this lifetime, what to speak of in it. Say our previous lifetime, we lose our recollection because we lose our body. The memory somehow or other goes with the body. Every 7 years our body, all the cells in our body are replaced apparently. So this is one fundamental reason why we're so prone to forget. Because somehow or other memory is connected with your gross body. And when you lose it, lose the gross body, the memory tends to go with it. People who don't believe in reincarnation, one reason they often give for not believing in it is they say that I can't remember a last lifetime. So seeing I can't remember it, I don't feel that it exists. I don't feel that I had a last lifetime to be remembered. But we can then ask them that, Do you remember being in your mother's womb and I doubt whether any of them will remember being in their mother's womb. And then you can ask them that, do you therefore think that you were not in your mother's womb? And obviously we were in our mother's womb, but we can't remember. So just because you can't remember your last lifetime or any other previous lifetimes doesn't mean that there was no last lifetime to be remembered. But the thing is that as we change our bodies, then our memory is lost. But Prabhupada did explain in one letter that when you become completely purified and your consciousness is free from the influence of the mode of ignorance, then you can remember all your previous lifetimes, if you want to. Might not be a very nice thing to remember. Prabhupada once suggested that one reason that Krishna doesn't allow us to remember so many previous lifetimes is that it might be too shocking to see that there I was as an animal, living in horrible conditions, suffering, all sorts of terrible conditions. So we're not able to remember. But Krishna, he remembers his previous appearances, and of course later on Krishna explains that he knows all living beings, he knows the past of every living being, he even knows the future of every living being. So his consciousness is not at all limited, it's unlimited, because he's the Supreme Lord. So then in verse 6, Krishna explains why it is that I'm different from you. Because I have the spiritual body which never deteriorates. Therefore, I can remember everything. Therefore, I can act independently of the modes of material nature. I can appear and disappear at will. I'm never forced to appear. I'm never forced to disappear. Completely transcendental. So this verse here, verse 6, is really the first very clear statement that Krishna makes to just completely put himself in a different category altogether. Others, like the verse before, it shows a distinction between Krishna and us, but it doesn't necessarily indicate that Krishna is God. It indicates that he's not in ignorance like us. But here he says, Bhutana Ishvaro Pisa, that I am the Lord of all the living beings. Then in verses 7 and 8, Krishna explains why he appears. These are like popularly understood reasons why Krishna appears: to kill the demons, re-establish religion, protect the devotees, like that. But in one lecture, I'll just read a little bit from that lecture. It's printed in Teachings of Queen Kunti. Srila Prabhupada gives like a deeper reason why Krishna appears. So Srila Prabhupada says, now the Lord comes to deliver the devotees, Paritranaya Sadhuna. Let's see. The question may arise that the Lord comes to deliver the devotee, but the Lord is already delivered. No, but the devotee is already delivered. Because the devotee is fully engaged in devotional service under the shelter of Krishna, the devotee is already delivered. The question may arise that the Lord comes to deliver the devotee, but the devotee is already delivered. The answer to this contradiction is that a sadhu, a devotee, does not require deliverance. But because he's very much anxious to see the Supreme Lord face to face, Krishna comes not to deliver him from the clutches of matter, from which he's already been delivered, but to satisfy his inner desire. Just as the devotee wants to satisfy the Lord in all respects, the Lord even more wants to satisfy the devotee. Such are the exchanges of loving affairs between the Lord and his devotee. So this is a very sweet way, very nice way of understanding this extraordinary phenomenon of the appearance of the Lord within this material world. He doesn't really have to come to deliver the devotees, because the devotees are already delivered. He doesn't really have to come to kill the demons, because the material energy will kill them anyway sooner or later, or some other demon will come and kill them, or some demigod or someone. He even doesn't so much need to come to establish principles of religion, because his devotees, they can also do that, like Srila Prabhupada established the principles of religion all over the world. So why does Krishna come? He comes because his devotees want him to come. And Krishna feels that, oh, my devotees want me to come, so I must come. I must come and reveal myself and perform my pastimes, and in this way enliven my devotees, satisfy their desires. So ultimately that is really why Krishna appears. Krishna can't be forced to appear just because there's some political circumstances or something like that. But when his devotees want, then he can't stop himself from appearing. Then in verses 9 and 10, Krishna explains how beneficial, how important it is to understand about who he is, what his position is, what our relationship with him is, what it really means when he appears within this world. Janma karma chame divya, that his janma and his karma, they are divyam, they're transcendental, divine. They're not like ours at all. In fact, they're so divine that if you simply understand that fact clearly, that'll have such an effect on you that it'll bring you to the divine platform. So just consider how divine Krishna's appearance is. You just understand that clearly, and it'll elevate you to the spiritual platform, and you'll go to Krishna's eternal abode. Verse 10 is interesting in that Krishna refers to three categories of people: those who are attached, those who are afraid, and those who are angry. And he says that you have to become free from the influence of these three things. And people who have become free from these three things, they've actually achieved mat bhava, bhava, the level of bhava, or love of God. So attachment, the class of person who are being referred to by the term attachment, they're the gross materialists. They're simply attached to enjoying material life. Those who are afraid, they are the impersonalists. They're afraid of personal relationships. They've had so many personal relationships in this material world, and they've suffered. So now they think, no more personality. If I don't have a personality, then I won't suffer. Very good. So this is impersonalism. And then angry. That refers to people like the Buddhists. They become so frustrated with material existence generally that they want to commit spiritual suicide. So therefore they take up some philosophy like Buddhism, which teaches that there is nothing, that you don't exist. And because even in impersonalism, you still exist. You may not exist as an individual, but you still exist as part of Brahman. But those who have become attracted to the Buddhist type of philosophy, nihilist type of what's called shunyavad, zero knowledge, nothing exists, they become so fried that they're not even satisfied with the idea of liberation and merging into the Brahman. They just want everything to cease to exist altogether. So Krishna's saying You have to become free from these three types of attitudes. They're impediments. And then if you fully absorb yourself in me, and if you develop transcendental knowledge about me, then you can develop love for me. And so many people have done that in the past. So you can see how Krishna is really putting himself forward now. That to understand me is very important, and to surrender to me is very, very important. Now, section B, verses 11 to 15. It's applying transcendental knowledge to activity to some extent, sort of jumping around a bit here and there. Krishna really is explaining in these verses how he is related to everything, including material activity like karmakandiya activity. And that if you understand his relationship even with karmakandiya, then you can become elevated and you can eventually become liberated. So verse 11, of course, it's a very well-known verse. It's in our list here. Everyone, he's saying, as people surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. And everyone is following my path. So what does this mean? Everyone is following Krishna's path. Does that mean the karmis? It appears the karmis are following their own paths, doing whatever they feel will benefit them materially. But Krishna is saying that everyone follows my path. So, the purport Prabhupada explains that it's quite easy to understand how those who are interested in either Bhagavan Paramatma or Brahman realization, how they are following Krishna's path. Because these three features of the Absolute, they're just different features of Krishna. So even if you're trying to realize Brahman, that Brahman is just a feature of Krishna. So even though it's indirect, but still ultimately, you're approaching Krishna. So Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, it's all path to Krishna. But what about just those people who are interested in sense gratification, or mystic powers, these types of goals which are not spiritual? So the thing is that Krishna, through the laws of karma, he's already established that if you work in a certain way, any way, you can choose any way, and you work in that way, but Krishna has already established what result you will get. There is no material activity that you can perform which is not covered by the laws of karma, for which there is no reaction. Even if you do some really obscure activity, then there's already a karmic result worked out for that sort of activity. So, whatever you do, Krishna has already set out that path. It'll lead to a certain goal or certain karmic reaction. Like if you eat meat, it's already established that if you eat meat of a particular animal, you get a specific result. That's already established by Krishna. So in a sense, that person, even though it appears they're following their own path, but actually they're following a path which has been chalked out by Krishna, and which reaches a certain goal which has been established by Krishna. So in this sense, even people who are materialistic or after mystic powers, they're following paths which have been laid out by Krishna. In other words, there's nothing new to do in this material world. You can't come up with something new. It's all been done before. And whatever result is meant to be achieved through doing that is already been established. So don't worry. So in this way, everyone is following Krishna's path. And that even applies, we see in verse 12, it even applies to demigod worship. Krishna doesn't say it in as many words, but here he's just talking about demigod worship people.